hear you perfectly. Yeah.
Okay.
That's great. I was watching some of your stuff, and I guess I didn't know this. Do you have an improv background?
I used to run my own improv class for about 5 or 6 months. I did improv in the city. I did improv when I took a course in college. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I started out in improv when I was 16. That's like the first thing that I started doing. And it really helped me just learning to fail on stage too. But that's the one thing that I'm good at. I couldn't do many characters or impressions, but I could. I learned how to think on my feet. And, it really just, my main goal was to do stand-up, but when you're 16, there's not really an avenue to start there, so I did improv for a long time, and, I just, you know, every time I've seen you, like, I'm gonna compliment you a whole bunch, but every time I've seen you, you've just killed, like, it seems like you do really well, and you started in 2014? What'd you say? Is that correct?
What is it, 2023? So about 8 years ago, I would say. So, yeah, I usually could trace back when I started doing comedy to Hannibal Buress' Comedy Central premiere. I remember I saw him on, like, a Friday night, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was called Live from Chicago. Live from Chicago. Which ironically, Matt Weiss got all the slack. But he actually told a similar joke about when you tell a woman with two black eyes nothing, you told her twice.
Right.
Like, he told that joke. I went to Matt Weiss' joke. I said, that's like not the same joke, but like Hannibal Buress.
No, yeah, it's a similar joke. I love Hannibal. He's one of my favorites. You know, it's...
Yeah.
It's,
Wilmot in Montclair. He had a huge show. This guy had freaking ballerinas coming out. This guy,
he's
like one of those fourth wall breaker comedy comedians. He does a lot of fourth wall breaker.
Yeah, he's doing a lot of stuff now. He does like music during the day. He'll have like a music, like a rap show during the afternoon, and then he'll do stand up at night. And it's like, I didn't know that he was still doing stand up. That's just awesome that he has like multifaceted.
He had a little setback with the, like, you know, when they recorded him talking about Bill Cosby, and then that led to the whole
Bill Cosby fiasco.
But at any rate, I saw him on a Friday night. And I went to Otto's Shrugging Head Open Mic the next Saturday. Mm-hmm. So whenever that premiered, I can always trace the day I started comedy from that date.
Mm-hmm.
I know it was a Saturday. I know I walked over. I took the train, Patrick, out to New York. And I walked over to 14th Street down to Otto's Shrunken Head Open Mic, and I did my first set there.
Do you remember what your first set was like?
I did the Eddie Murphy route. I was talking about taking a shit. I did a lot of shit taking jokes. I actually wrote jokes many, many years before that. I just never had the nerve to perform. And a comedian told me, "Man, go up there and perform anything else." I was so nervous about it, though. Like, I don't know. Because acting, I did acting. I did acting. Yeah, I have an acting and theater background. So it was different, though. You got to engage the audience more. You're acting, you just say your lines, not really engaging the audience. But, so I did it. I liked it. I ran the light. The guy had to like wave me off, like, oh, something that all new comedians do.
All new comedians,
like, Saturday night, you're so in your own world, you're not recognizing what's going on you. This is,
On the podcast, on this podcast recently, I came up with a great analogy because I've seen a lot of people, like newer people, do comedy, and it's like weird because I get like flashbacks of like how bad I used to be. So I'm like, the analogy that I came up with is that when you're starting out doing stand-up, it's like rock climbing blindfolded. You're like reaching for shit that you don't have yet. And then once you have an act, you can just reach for more stuff and it's easier path to like know what you're doing. Whenever I see new comics, I'm like, I'm way more
patient because I'm like, they just don't have an act yet. In like 6 months, they'll have an act. They'll have a set that they can do.
Right.
You listen more, you listen to how the audience reacts to you, you're more aware, conscious.
Right.
One thing is to be aware, you know, be aware, especially if a joke's not working or if it's not working, you know. It's almost like a conversation, almost like you have with the audience.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
There was a comedian, I was at, like, I'm not saying where, I don't want to call this person out, but he was doing horrible, probably knew, and the person just ran the light. Oh, had to be old. And the person lighted him and said, oh, that's the light. And said, oh, that's a 1 minute. Like, no, your time is up. And this person kept going. Like, the host said, your time is up, and you can walk for it. And then it got to a point where the host had to walk on stage. I remember, like, at the last Buddha.
Oh.
They would do that. They would walk up awkwardly to you toward the stage. I was like, damn, like.
No, it's tough. What I see now a lot is I see a lot of younger comics, like, they'll do crowd work, but they'll, like, try and flirt with women in the audience. And I'm like, to me, I'm like, dude, I don't like that because I'm a self-deprecating comic. So I'm always like, you got to make yourself look stupider on stage. You got to be sillier on stage than that, you know. I don't know. I think some people can pull it off, but, like, for the most part, like, when I see people do that, it just makes me cringe. I'm like, flirting with women.
Are they asking for contact?
No, they're just trying to look cool, I think. Or, and I think, like, I can understand that if you're bombing, you don't want to look like an idiot. But to me, it's like, because I think it's a presence thing, I guess. Or, like, you know. Right, yeah.
You know, just get on there. You know, I've done that, get on their good side.
Because you want to get on the good side, I understand that. Yeah. It's. Because when you're up there, you want to be, like, charismatic and, like, you know, welcoming to people. Yeah. You know, that's
you
a. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you want to be likable. And you want to have fun. Like, one comedian, because I used to be nervous in front of my own people. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine, like,
yeah.
Black audiences are super tough, you know, they make you tougher as a comic, because...
It's tough, but they're easy, because once you figure out what makes them laugh, just go with it.
Right.
You know, but you gotta figure it out, and you gotta have confidence. That's the
oh, yeah.
You have the confidence, and you gotta have fun. You can't take things too seriously. That way, you're okay even if you don't do good. Like, that's what one comedian told me. I was nervous. It was Brooklyn somewhere. You know? I think it was Jay, singing Jay. I think I talked to him. He was like, man, he said, man, fuck them people, man. Have fun. That's all. Just have fun. Don't worry about it.
Right.
Have fun. If they see you having fun, they'll have fun. That's all you gotta do. Have fun.
Right, for sure. You know? And that's what gets easier is, like, it's not that you don't care about the crowd's opinion, you do, but there just comes a point where you're so used to just, like, having sets, like, where you're performing at mics and, like, no one is paying attention to you, and you get really used to apathy, like, people not really caring. And then also, like, you can know this with how crazy the world is, like, you can be happy that you didn't make certain people laugh. You're like... I'm like, okay, I didn't make the 80-year-old Trump supporter laugh. That's not going to kill me. That's not going to ruin my night that I didn't make this bigot laugh. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
So you get used to different audiences like that. Like,
yeah. I think when you try too hard to get you just got to do you. Like,
oh, yeah, for sure.
You can't force it.
I mean.
Some comedians try to force it.
Yeah.
You know? Especially when you're new. You try to force it.
Yeah, I think when you're starting out too, like, it takes a lot of confidence when you're starting out because you have that, at least those three, like, words in your head, I'm funny, like, you know, two words in your head, I'm funny, so you want to show it, and when you have, like, nothing, it's really tough, and, you know, I've been doing it for so long that I always have to remember how hard it was because it really was. And, like, And, like, for you to have an acting background, like, it's kind of, it's probably a lot like monologuing, right? Like, when you're doing... Right. And with stand-up, what's so tough is, like, some people can play, like, a character, but for the most part, like, I'm a big wrestling fan. It's like you're just, like, the, like, yourself, like, to the exaggerated degree almost. So, like, you gotta be, like, yourself and, you know, comedy is, you know, it's interesting because it's very relatable to people. Like, everyone likes to laugh. But comedy, like, taste is so personal. So you can put, like, your whole entire, like, personality and what you like out there and have, like, a sense of humor that people just don't understand at first.
Yeah.
Like, I loved...
I like to see... I exaggerate. I might say it's me. I might say it's a friend. I might say it's a family member that don't exist or die.
Right.
Person, you know, sometimes it's something like negative, like I'll say that, you know, I'll say they did it, or simply just to take the heat off of me, you know.
Oh, for sure.
You know, if you're an artist, you don't, it doesn't have to be, it can be abstract. It doesn't have to be.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You're right. You can be completely abstract, make it about an animal. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I do. So... Your mind is free. Like, just be free. You have a whole kit. You're right. Mind is a canvas. And you gotta lead the people in because it's your job to lead. So let's say you had an audience that knew nothing about wrestling.
Yeah.
Like me, I probably haven't watched wrestling since like Hulk Hogan days or
right.
Man days. You know, I'm not a huge fan. I never was a huge fan. I could always do one of God's men. You know, but I understand the theatricals of it. I appreciate that. You know, so. Even if I talk to an audience who doesn't understand wrestling or doesn't like it and all that, I can like bring them in by like pushing it towards like something they like or something like
oh,
that.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
The one.
Everybody knows the fake, so there you go. You know,
right. Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a what I wanted to say was I watched like one of your sets. Like you had like a compilation of like your first year. And you did this set on bombing, which was so great. It was, like, perfect. Like, all the examples and, like, and things you gave was, like, the tags you gave were just fantastic. It's like, oh, the comics will come out. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
You know, and it also lets the crowd know that this shit is hard. It, you know, people, it's going to happen to anybody.
Right.
And really, yeah, you can ask me after that. So I had somebody say, you know, Mike, I don't want to say the punchline, but they were saying the punchline from that day after I did that. Like, yeah.
Right.
But yeah, I love doing that too because it's a guaranteed laugh. One thing, even if comedians can laugh, everybody really laughs at that because they know what that's like. So. I love doing that bit, and I do it so much I can say it verbatim. I know all the tags to it. I don't have to think about it.
Right.
You know, it's not a new joke. You know, so I usually do it when I perform, you know, in front of a paying audience, or not a paying audience, but a show.
Right.
Yeah. So it's part of my bit. It's one thing I always make sure I get that out, just to let you know, just a humble.
Yeah, because... I have a whole thing in my intro where I mention, like, I have a very nervous energy on stage, but I've been performing for so long that that's just how I am. I have a lot of anxiety and just, like, as a person. So I sort of break it in that way, and it works. But it's, you know, with that, what I've noticed early on with a couple crowds that were kind of tougher was, I think it's like an East Coast thing, but some of them like to be shit on a little bit. Like, they like when you have a bit of an attitude and can kind of fight back verbally.
Yeah.
They like that. Like, they it's kind of like Hate Mile. Like, you kind of have to, like, really go after them and be like, no, I deserve to be up here. Like, I...
Yeah.
I can...
You gotta win them over. Some people you gotta win over. Some people, you know, you got to fight. You have to be a fighter. You can't...
Yeah.
You can't let them bully you. You gotta have fun. And you can't let them bully you. You can't let them scare you.
Right.
Or anything like that. You gotta be fierce. Because you're not only fighting for the left, you're fighting against other comedians. Really, I mean, we're all work together, but we also want each other's spots.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You see a show, like, damn, I'm gonna do that show. I'm funnier than all these motherfuckers. You're competing.
Right.
You're competing. It is a competition. It is a competition.
It is, because, you also just have people who will... They're not copying you and you're not copying them, but, you know, you have the same sort of style that you think, like, okay, I can do this a little bit better, or, like, you know, you just get in your head. I always get in my head of, like, you know, I try not to be too cocky. It's so funny how, like, I never used to be consistent with my sets, and it always used to annoy me. And now I'll have it where, like, I'll have, like, 5 good sets in a row, and I'll be like, this is magical to me. I'm like, what is happening? But,
One thing is, I have so much material, man. I've been taping so many of my sets. I have like a terabyte hard drive. I'm putting all my damn. I got so many damn sets.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's good to have stuff. I always feel bad.
I have over an hour of material, like, alone. Like, if I wanted to, I can do an hour of material. The thing about it is, it's just that I never really get a chance to do it. But it's just so much stuff, and I got so much stuff in my books and all that. So that's what me going to so many damn open mics.
Yeah.
The same mics, you tend to write the material because you don't want to keep saying the same thing over and over again. So
yeah,
you have a lot of material. You could just freestyle a lot. You can just go and then bam, you got a joke here. Like, you talk to somebody like, I went to the doctor. Guess what doctor I went to? I went to the urologist, and I had to get, you know, and then go on to your proctology joke.
Right. I don't want to get this wrong. You're a teacher, right?
Yes, I'm an art teacher. Yeah.
Yeah, I know a couple comedians who are teachers, and you know, it's just like, it seems like that's a lot of material that you can get, because children can be crazy. So.
Well, yeah, it translates. Because there's a lot of, I know some lawyers that are comedians. You know, people who are
into
public speaking. You know. A lot of people in the public speaking era, they become comedians.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of teachers, you know, Scott, Gina, G.L. Douglas, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I look at them damn shows, and the teachers never on them damn shows, never. see the paper with the A+ on it, comedy show, like, man, y'all know I'm a damn teacher, like.
Right, yeah. You know, it just sucks because there's, like, I always feel like, there's these, like, micro celebrity comics in the scene that just get booked all the time. And it's like, that's fine, they're good, but it's like, wouldn't you want some variety? Like, I think that's the great thing about comedy is the variety.
Shout out to them. The difference between them and me is this. I work, I'm tired, so I'm not out there like that.
No. And me,
that's my problem. I'm not out here like that. I'm not on the scene. Like, I try to go to mics every, you know, twice a week or 3 times a week. But man, I hate going to New York. I hate going to New York.
No, you gotta do what you gotta do. It's, you know, it's a grind.
Yeah.
It's a grind.
I don't have the energy like I did when I first started. Like, I first got out there, I drove all in Florida and everything.
Right. Yeah, just to do a mic. Yeah. No, because it's expensive, and it's like, it's the stuff of, like, you know, it's fun when you get there and you can talk to comics and be like, you know, kind of hang and stuff. But you also got to have, like, the proper energy. You can't go out when you're not feeling well, because then you'll just, you won't treat people nicely. Right.
Yeah. He's walking back and forth. He's looking at you. He's he's enunciating and making his words louder so you can hear him.
That's
the energy. You know, like, man, what is going on?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, like that, right. You know, but that makes people hear you and pay attention as opposed to when you're just standing in one spot. I'm not saying that, you know, comedians do that all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You gotta
hobnob.
You gotta meet comedians. You gotta
for sure. You gotta be.
You know, you get friends.
Right. And like.
You might have to drive out to Harrisburg, PA. Like I knew a better comedian from RTB Lounge, and he said, "Yeah, I got a show out in Harrisburg." I mean,
right. It's like you gotta figure out what works best for you schedule wise. You know, it's a thing, and like, you know, the grass is always greener though. Like that's the thing that I learned. Like we can look at a lot of things when we're up to these glasses. You know, if you're not going to one show, if you keep going to another thing, and you're like, I'm on the right track, there's always going to be some other mic or some other show that you're going to be, like, clamoring to get on. It's not like it never ends. It's not like, and that's the cool thing, but also the frustrating thing with comedy is, like, you can never really master it. It's like,
oh, no.
So it's fun to challenge, but the grind can be really tough. And, you know.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You got, you know, like, there's always somebody going to challenge you or say your set was bad or you're bombed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's always going to be somebody or something. So you always got to, you know, you got to fight. Like, you got to be a fighter every day because, you know, and you're always as good as your last joke.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I have had shows where I killed the first 2 minutes and then the fourth minute I'm bombed.
Oh yeah, I have the worst habit. If I'm booked on a show like recently, like I've the worst example of this was when I was in Texas. I got to be like in Texas for 3 days, and I got on a show the first night, and I was second, was first. So I always hate being first because it's like you're the assistant manager to the host. It's like, okay, and there was a birthday there. So, like, I did, like, I had, like, 10 minutes. I did 8 because I was killing, and I was, like, I didn't want to have that, like, you know, that moment where you, like, have to explain, like, a joke and then be, like, okay, am I going to lose the audience here? Am I going to, you know, have that 3 seconds of, like, time where I was, like, I'm killing right now. I just want to finish while I'm on top and just be, like, done with it and have the energy. That's my worst habit is, like, I'll be doing, like, you could give me, like, a 10-minute set. I'll do, like, 4 minutes and be like, no, I killed. I didn't want to.
You gotta end on top. Yeah. That's what we're planning, man. You gotta plan your set out. Like,
yeah.
You know, your best jokes for last.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You want to end on that high note. Barry Ritz told me that. I did a set. He said, man, whatever that last joke was, ended right there. I said, yeah, but,
right.
You know, stuff off,
right?
Just ended too early, but yeah. So that's the fine line. And also, you want to make the depending on who you are,
right?
Now, if you're a Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, you can talk for about 5 minutes without telling a joke,
right?
They still want to listen to you. But when you're new, I tell every new comedian, 2 minutes, you need laughter or nod,
right?
Nodding is good because they're agreeing with you or something. They don't have to laugh, but they have to agree with you or nod.
Yeah, they have to know what you're saying, like. That's my thing. It's like, if people can...
After 2 minutes and nothing, they're going to zone off. They're going to start looking at their phones. They're going to start looking at the menu, whatever's in front of them.
Right.
They lost the audience.
Yeah. And you just got to have that, you know... It just comes with confidence and knowing, like, what you're doing. And, you know, once you got that, it's like... The crowd can also tell. It's like... It's like sharks, like, they know, they can smell blood. It's the same thing with audiences. Like,
they can sniff it out if you're not.
And, like, to me, the fun thing, like, not to brag or anything, but, like, the fun thing with my style, I guess, and voice is, like, you know, it's kind of a shock to people, like, that I'm confident or that, like, I have, like, material on top of all the anxiety that I, like, just, like...
There's plenty of, like anxiety with Asian comedians, like, Richard Lewis, Lewis Black.
Yeah. Yeah, like...
Richard Jenny. Well,
oh,
well,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, to name some of my influences, like, one guy is, like, Gary Shandling has a huge influence to me, and, like, I'm pretty relatable, too.
Louis Anderson,
yeah.
Yeah.
He's someone else, too, like, a bigger guy. Like...
Like, a lot of vulnerability.
Yeah. It's cool to hear, like, that also you know all these comedians, too. Like, you were talking about, you know, you mentioned some people that you were, like, influenced by. So that's really cool, like, to have.
Dude, I've been watching comedy way, like, my, probably the introduction to me with Eddie Murphy, Raw, and all that, as far as comedy. I think that's probably my introduction, but...
Yeah.
But also, watching, like, back in the HBO days, Jimmy Tanua with that damn accordion, and I remember there was a show called Woman of the Night, Paula Poundstone,
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorite female comics, well, the other one's Ellen DeGeneres, I think she's great. Like,
oh, yeah, she's great.
She's great. She did a new one, it was hilarious.
Oh, yeah, it was really good.
Like, she's got her own show, and she was hilarious. I said, wow, she's funny. And Rita Rudner. I love Rita Rudner.
Oh, yeah, she's great.
Yeah. Her whole style, like, she just comes in this nice flowy gown and just does these dim-witty woman jokes. Like, she has a guy, like, hey, what kind of car are you driving? He's like, I drive a Maxima, Nathan White, 2200. She's like, no, you have what kind of car I drive? What kind of car you drive? He says a white one.
Right.
I don't know what happened to her, but yeah, I remember going to watch those kind of comedians, just different styles coming up, you know, and just seeing how they explode. And then Death Jam comedy came out, and that kind of meant to me like, damn, that's what we got to do. Like, damn, because you watch that comedy jam, they weren't like those comics.
You know,
black people would run away, go outside to laugh. Like, that's how we laugh. We run outside, run down the street, and come back just to laugh.
Right. No. Yeah. You, do you like Ralphie May?
Yeah, I love Ralphie
May. Yeah, Ralphie May is one of my favorites, too. Like, just, he always did well with black audiences and was just, like, awesome with just the way that he could express himself. And, like, he was always, like, he always caught people off guard with how smart and, like, intelligent he was. Like, that was another thing, too, of, like, if you can subvert people's, like, expectations of you, that's always a cool thing.
Yeah.
Like,
he's one of those white guys who's so confident he can do black audiences. Like, yeah. Like this flow just mixed well, like Gary Owen.
The thing with those guys in school is, like, they are a part of the culture in a way. Like, they're friends with a lot of black comics, and, you know, they just know, like, the inside stuff. And when you have, like, those inside references to any type of community, it's like people can, you know, cling to that. They'll be like, okay, this guy knows the inside of what we're living.
I think fat guys, they get an easy pass because people love fat guys.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost like being a jolly, you know, Santa and all that.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah, being heavier helps.
I don't want to call them out, but they be like, hey, man, you trying to roast? Like, nah, man, but you know you're fat, though, right?
No, I mean, you see me, I'm, you know, the thing that's, like, terrible with me is, like, my weight would be fine if I was 6'5". You know? It's not good to be 260 pounds when you're 5'7". It's like...
Yeah. Like, I'm not... I'm muscular, but I work out a lot. I have fat room in my belly.
Yeah.
That's hard for a
comedian. Oh, yeah, that's very hard.
You're a good-looking person,
Because also, it's like, not to sound. Yeah. Yeah.
Self-deprecating doesn't work on you if you look good.
No.
Like punching down, because you almost like punching down on people who say talking stuff. You know.
That's
like a taboo comedy now, punching down. But I'm, you know.
And to me, it's like, yeah. To me, I'm always. What?
I actually went down. I'm not punching down.
Oh yeah. Oh.
I'm going to the spot, and I see pride flags everywhere. I said, oh, okay, this must be a gay bar. Okay, whatever. I go in there, I got some jokes for these mugs, I don't care. I go in there, I walk up, there's a lady, you know, lesbian lady, mm-hmm. obviously.
Yeah.
She's a host. I walk up to her, and she said, okay, you know the rules for the mic, right? I'm like, she gives me a scan thing on my phone to scan on the phone. I look up the PDF file. Bro, it was a 2-page rule sheet for how to conduct yourself on stage. There was rules against punching down.
Yeah, I think, you know, to me I have a mixed feeling on all that shit. Like, to me I'm like, if I see something like that, like...
You've seen it before?
I've heard about it. I've heard they have that at, like, Portland and different clubs there, like, in liberal places. Like, to me, it's kind of easy for me because I'm a very, like, progressive person politically, so it's, like, easy for me. But, like, for me, what I hate about that is I never want to be seen as, like, a fuddy-duddy or, like, too overly woke. Like, to me, I'm like, what's funny to me is I like to make people feel good with my comedy. That's the thing that's kind of different from me than I think other people, because to me, like, when I started doing comedy, like, in real life, it was out of fighting back because I was picked on a lot. So, like, my humor for a while was mean, and then that made me feel bad on the inside. So when I do comedy now, it's like I still have stuff that is, you know, offensive. Like, I do a lot of jokes now about my autism, and I have a joke. Are you familiar with the TV show Bob's Burgers at all?
I'm familiar, I just don't watch it.
Yeah, well, I have a joke about how, you know, the joke goes, you know, everyone thinks the three children on that show are autistic. They're not. They have fetal alcohol syndrome. And, like, that works, but, like, if there was ever someone in the audience that, you know, had that or knew someone, like, I would feel awful, but, you know, it's like...
There was a race council in the audience, so they, like, and I don't know, you don't know who's going to be in the
audience. Right. And it's all about, you know.
And I said, oh, that's why.
Yeah. It's all about intent, too. You know, I think the hard thing now is people, you know, so many people watch comedy now that are not familiar with the genre. That's the thing that sucks about it now, is, like, the farther it gets, the more bigger it gets well-known, the harder it is to distinguish what the point of stand-up is. You know, I think it's great that people can do stand-up and add social justice to it and stuff like that, but to me, I'm like, I watch stand-up for jokes. I'm a nerd for jokes. Like,
I'm not trying to... Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's my issue with the do better, what they were doing.
Right. Because it's like...
Yeah, we're talking about no punching down. Like, if you're a white guy, you can talk about black people, but I can talk about white people.
Right.
I can't white people talk about black people.
Right. It's like... You just have experiences. And, you know... And a lot of that is not... The way that I view that is... Like, an ignorance inclusivity thing. It's like, you know, the funny thing is, you know, everyone knows, like, if you have interracial relationships and interracial friendships, you will say the most awful shit to each other. That is like, you know, the most kind of most racist things to each other. But you can get away with it and talk about those things and have those jokes, you know, with your friends. But doing them publicly is a totally different concept.
you know, it's like, if your black friend, like, comes around and you're like, oh, he's late all the time, you can't say that, like, on stage. But, like, you know, that'll be a common reoccurring joke that you have. It's like, you know, yeah, it's just things,
yeah,
like...
I mean, kind of, it's a feeling.
Right.
But my issue, and the other issue I have with that is, like, you can't... I mean, people throughout comedy, like, I've seen people that are like...
Right. No, because... Right. 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 Like, right. I mean, you know, I think when I hear people have those rules and shit, I'm like, what have you watched in comedy that has made you have this viewpoint? Because I can understand that viewpoint. If you're used to people coming on and doing comedy bad, like, I can understand that. Like, I think that's what a lot of it comes from, is in open mic comedy. You know, you have to learn this. Like, you have to figure this out. When you do comedy, I think you can relate to this.
Sensitive.
Oh, I don't want to talk over you.
No. I'm just saying. The deeper answer to that is we're an ultra sensitive.
Yeah.
I was on Clubhouse, and this was after the Dave Chappelle thing where he was talking about the trans community.
Yeah.
And I was trying to explain to these people on Clubhouse. There was like a gay dude. He was like all over the place. But I was like, dude, there's a reason why Dave Chappelle gets paid millions of dollars. And they don't care if some trans people walk down on him. He's still getting paid millions.
Right, because it's huge. Like, I have a whole viewpoint on that. My viewpoint on Dave Chappelle in general now is... He was great when he was younger, and I think the thing with him now is he's kind of... Stand-up becomes boring to comics, to professional comics, at a time. Do you know, like, he could do, like, any set in his sleep. The things that are going to make him make comedy more entertaining is when he can push those extra buttons. You know, when you can... It's a cool thing as a comedian to make people laugh. It's an even cooler thing to make people, you know, think, make people sad even, you know, to, you know, do point and stuff. Like, I think he's amazing, you know, when he's not, I don't know if this is offensive or not, but I love, like, when he talks about racial stuff, when he talks about, you know, inequality and stuff like that. Like, I always feel like those jokes with him is, like, that stuff is great. And the thing that also, like, the only thing that bothers me about Chappelle is his stuff is too lowbrow for kind of what I expect. Like, I like a lot of, like, wittiness. So, like, I'm cool with dark humor. I love dark humor. I'm a huge fan of Daniel Tosh,
Anthony Jeselnik.
I'm kind of a nerd. I like it more, like... You have to kind of be, like, linguistically capable
for me to like anything. Of, like, if you can have wordplay into it, it's, like, you know.
And to me, it's just, like, I realized that, like, when it comes to Chappelle, here's all I'll say. Is, like, I just have a different comedy ideology than him. It's like religion, almost. It's like you have your different viewpoints of what comedy and how you do comedy is. My comedy is a lot nicer and self-referential. Like, I make fun of myself. I'm more of, like, I don't... And, you know, it's common in the, like, East Coast comedy for people to, you know, rag on the audience and do insult humor. And to me, I'm just, like, I like to tell my story about myself and my... stuff, and, you know, it's funny, like, you know,
the stuff I see now, like, I wanted to know your opinion on this, because everyone talks about it, is, like, how popular crowd work has gotten. Like, the thing to me that's funny is, like, people are watching comedy now as younger people that are getting into comedy and liking it as fans. It's so different now to when me and you were younger, because we saw comedians and they just had material. They just talked about shit. Now people see stuff on TikTok and all they think a comedian is asking people in the audience, what do you do for a living? It's like, that's the viewpoint of what comedy is now. And that's very tough. Yeah. It's a skill you have to have. Oh, yeah. Right.
Dave Chappelle is, it's always been the theme of his, is the love for his race and his people and what people goes through. And I think what Dave Chappelle was always trying to get at was that black people still suffer. Black men still suffer. Black women still suffer. But they don't see that for as much as bad as a trans person who ultimately decides to be that thing.
No, No.
I'm making a stark contrast between a black person who doesn't decide.
No, Jayla.
There's no conversation or debate whether a black person is black or not.
No.
Black.
Here's what I will just throw to you.
I think he tries to portray.
Here's what I can just say about that. That is just my thing with that. And I think this is what pisses off a lot of people with that sort of argument, is there are black people who are trans. That there's a huge community of black people who are trans.
Yeah.
And I think his viewpoint is, which he's worded it perfectly, is his humor is mean. His humor is, what he says is, it's his quote that he always says, it's always funny until it happens to you. That's his thing of, like, you know, we all struggle from something, but, you know, you have to, and I can understand, you have to have a little bit of self-reference to what you were doing. And I think that's the only thing. I think what's hard, especially with all that stuff, is there comes a point where it almost seems obsessive. Like, you know, it's kind of funny with him, like, he used to be so skinny, and, like, now he's jacked, and now he's, like, it's like, you know, he's probably, I have a couple of comedian friends who are, like, he's probably taken, like, you know, stuff for masculinity, and, like, you know, he's, like, probably on, like, not drugs, but, like, stuff to, like, you know, and, like, it's like, yeah, but it's, like, you know, I just think with him, what's so tough is, people forget. It's like the same thing with me being a wrestling fan, like I mentioned. Like, there are people, like, you can't, you know, the same thing with people getting offended with comedy. It's like, you can't go to a wrestling show and be like, that person hit that person with a chair. That is totally not something you should do morally. It's like, it's wrestling. That's what happens. It's like, with comedy, it's like, you can't expect it to be serious 100% of the time, or what that person really believes. It's just saying and doing the most funniest thing to get that reaction.
Here's the other setup. If you tell a comedian he can't joke about something, or are you saying that's taboo, you can't talk about that?
Yeah.
You know what they're going to do? They're going to do it anyway across that line, because that's what they make them famous.
And we're rebels at heart. Like, you know, comedy is like, yeah, it's like, you know, because you spend so much time in real life. In real life, like, you have to be kind of, everyone knows nowadays, you have to be very professional, very, like, cordial, you know. You got to let loose as a comedian. You got to be, you know, you got to be funny. Like, you got to be silly. So.
Yeah, as long as, here's the thing. That's what they love George Carlin. George Carlin can talk about anything. He can talk about anything. One thing George Carlin always did, he made it smart.
Yeah, of course.
Humor, he never forgot that.
Yeah.
He just
and he was preaching. He was doing, oh, he got me off of religion, George Carl. He got me off of religion.
Yeah.
Eternity. He made question the silliness of it. A lot of stuff in life, like how silly the silly. That's what I like to do in my comedy.
Right.
I like to poke fun at the silliness in life, even the most serious things have silliness and ironies in it that you think can be put into a humoristic light. And even he said anything, he said even R-A-P-E can be funny if you put it in the right context.
Oh, yeah. Like, I know so many.
Picture Elmer Fudd R-A-R-ing Porky Pig. And I thought about it, yeah, that is funny.
Like,
that's
you know, John Mulaney has a joke about how, like, that's a rape joke, that he's like, you know, how he was accidentally chasing a woman through the subway because he thought that she would, like, was going to the same train as him, and she was becoming afraid of him because he was running after her. And he's like, she doesn't know I'm like a man child. She doesn't know that I'm, like, that I'm not tough at all.
But she sees a guy running after her. Yeah, it's like, you know, and you know, it's always like you can go anywhere. You just need to know. You just need to have a proper point. I think that's the thing that's the one thing that just amazes me now is
I like that stand-up has become more well known in a sense. But the other thing I hate about that is so many people just don't understand stand-up anymore. It's like
the problem I see is too many. Well, for one, just too many. It's so easily accessible now.
Yeah.
Social media and just open mics, like
yeah.
You know, I'm talking about Eddie Clark, and we say, yeah, the problem is this saturating comedians. Back when because he started back in '80, he told me like back
yeah.
Then, not many comedians. That's why Smokey was getting paid to get all his gigs,
right?
TV shows and all that because there wasn't that many people. But you had to be good to walk those clouds. Like the open mic back then was like peppermint clouds, right? Like
if right.
You had like an orange back then, you knew that spot, you know, you're on your way. Because those clouds were tough. It wasn't like an open mic cloud where you just walk there, you know, tell your dick jokes for like 5 minutes and go off, and then you can get booked somewhere at another place. But no, back then, it wasn't that convenient. Many comedians could not make it, could cut it, you know?
Right.
Yeah, you had to be good. You had to have jokes, you had to have material, you had to write yourself out and perform it, and have a chance where you can take
crowd
class. Now,
oh, yeah.
Just anybody come up and sign their name,
yeah.
And just have them like 5 minutes about nothing,
yeah.
And call themselves a comedian.
I guess so. That's another thing that annoys me so much is when I see people who start doing comedy and like immediately they call themselves a comedian. And, like, I don't want to gatekeep, but it took me, you know, until I was getting paid to call myself a comedian. Like, you know.
I don't call myself a comedian. I'm on stage, I'm a comedian. My TikTok and my YouTube channel says the comedian.
Right.
I say, hey, what you do? That's like the first thing I tell them.
Right. Yeah.
Like, it'll come up in passing. I don't advertise my family and all that. You know, it's almost like a alter ego for me.
Right.
First of all, I don't want to conflicting with my job. I don't want something I say.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I can imagine that.
If I don't tell where I live or that, and I don't put it on my Facebook and all that. What's on my Facebook is a job I had like 5 or 6 years ago.
Right.
That place is like bulldozed. So. I've had people look that up. I've had people go in there and, oh, like, I see you're a teacher. Blah,
blah, blah.
Yeah, well, go ahead and tell my boss. Go ahead. I'm fired.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't call
information.
I don't get paid for it.
Right. Right. Like,
it is a hobby.
Oh, me neither. Like, you know, I'm very lucky in that, like, with the podcast and everything, I can sell shirts now and, like, you know, all these, like, I'm not by any means killing it. Like, I hate that I don't get booked on as many shows. But, like, you know, I did 3 shows last year that were paid. And, like, you know, it wasn't, like, you know, a lot. It was, like, $15, $20. But it's, like, when you do those, like, I saw you do
I think the one show that I saw you at that I did was Josh Tinley's show.
Yeah, that's when I got paid.
Yeah, and that was really, really nice because I fucking bombed that set. I don't know about you. I fucking bombed so bad.
Do you ever look at your set and then you go look at what you were supposed to say?
Yeah.
God damn it.
But
I'm my worst critic. Like,
no, and
people say you were great. I was like, what? I didn't notice the laughter. Like, sometimes you notice when people are laughing. You know what I mean? Like, you ever got off
of Yeah. And also that room, Josh is very honest about it. He knows how hard it is for comics. Like, that's a hard crowd. Like, what happened to me was, like, I was doing my set, and then, like, 3 minutes into my set, these just audience members came into, like, the room, and I had to start my set all over. I was like, I already did these jokes.
Somewhere
instead of
puking the wall between you,
yeah.
It's not like, you know.
And they're like,
it's like
a studio, so they're used to rappers, and it's like.
Yeah, it's an odd setup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the one I did, are you talking about the one
where
all the people were there because there was a singer there?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
That one,
Okay. I did too.
Okay, that studio.
Really good. You're right. I did good at that one. You're right.
Yeah.
The last one I did with him, there was a few people there, and yeah, I felt some silence.
Yeah.
The loud silence, I call it. The loud silence. I felt it.
And silence is different for us, I think, who've been doing it a while, because you're like, I know, like, when you're starting out, you're like, okay, I know I'm not going to get laughs, like, it's going to take a while, but when we're so used to it, it's like muscle memory, it's like, they usually laugh at that point, it's like...
You walk completely, you don't laugh at a joke that you know that you've done... And you know what's funny? It messes up your whole set and line of thinking.
Oh, yeah.
Transition. Because now it's like, oh, well, I can't do the tags after that. Right. I'm going to abandon this joke. I need to go somewhere
else. Yeah.
Because
it's like... It's like if you shot a gun and, like, nothing came out. And you're like... Like, I'm used to the bullet coming out.
Yeah. You gotta reload. You gotta think what happened. Yeah,
I've never been booed. I've been heckled before because when I was doing Bringers in New York, I used to do these, you know, atheist jokes, and they would kill with like 20-year-olds, but their grandmothers in the audience would get so upset, and I'd be like, I can't believe I'm being heckled by an 80-year-old. And be like, feel bad, and be like, oh, I didn't mean to make you upset.
It's like, it's your truth. I know I'm one too. It's your truth. It's who you are.
Yeah.
But some people see that as you worshiping Satan.
Yeah.
They don't see that anything different.
Yeah.
So you gotta be careful. Yeah, you just gotta be careful. Older. They could they couldn't even fathom somebody being that way. Like,
yeah.
It's crazy. They'd rather you be like a jihadist Muslim than you know, they think, you know.
Because then you at least believe in something.
Yeah, you gotta at least believe in something.
When you're like...
You gotta know your crowd. Like,
yeah,
like,
for sure.
Like some black crowds, I ain't gonna do the atheist theory because most black people aren't atheists. Like,
right, of course. Yeah.
I have no problem. I have a problem lying about religion. I do it to get women all the time. I'm like, yeah, church is good. Yeah, church is good to me. Like,
right.
I don't care. I'll take some Christian like the church. I don't care.
Right. Yeah.
Send me to hell. You just gotta know your audience. Like I said, I have no problem exaggerating. I have no problem exaggerating.
Right. Because that's what you gotta have fun on stage. That's the thing that I always have to remember is you gotta have fun on stage. You know, you can get so stressed out, you know, just with the grind of it, you know, going to places, because, like, some places you have to, like, buy, like, a drink or, like, an item, and then, you know,
Yeah. You can be like, okay, and for me, it's like, I don't drive, so if I had to Uber somewhere, like, if I'm not traveling with other comics, like, it's hard. Like,
I did that while I was driving. Well, one thing, when I did that in a car, I did a lot of, I went to New York. Because you can go to New York and do a lot of mics. You just have to have money. That's the problem. New York. You gotta get a taxi or ride that damn bicycle. Right. And you gotta buy drinks. Like, I would go on Saturday and I would go to mics all day. I had lined up. I had planned. Now, I don't know anything about New York doing mics now. But on the Saturday, I go here. I make sure I get here. I go to Otto. Make sure I get there at a certain time. And one thing I hate about Otto was I get there early. And there'd be one dude that gets there and signs all his friends up.
Like, oh, yeah.
You get there, there's nobody there. There's like 15 names of us. Like, are you serious? Oh, same here.
No, and that's an annoying thing, too. Because, because it's almost like, if you're going to do that, just book your own show, man. just book a show and have those people on it.
There's not that many people that, they don't put that many names, but there's people that do that thing. The mics out here, too. It's like, God, you get their rows, like, eight names over. It's like, what the hell?
Yeah. When I was in Texas, we were at this club called The Creek in the Cave, and it was weird because Rogan was supposed to take it over. He ended up not. So there was a lot of people from different states there the same week that I was. And we went to this mic at 3:30, and
Dallas?
Yeah, no, Austin.
Okay.
And we went to this mic, and we're like, okay, we're there at like 2, and we have to leave at like 3:30. And we sign up, like, the first four. We're, like, in the first four. And then the people come in that run it, and they're like, no, we do a bucket. And we ended up being, like, the last of 30 people.
I hate.
And it was like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen some buckets that are manipulated.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and like me, I'm like I can get pretty aggro at mics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
and to me, it's like the only thing I get like upset about is I need to know when I'm going on. That's all I need is just tell me when I'm going on. Just give me a point of, like, this person and then you. It's like, because also, like, you got to gauge the audience. You know, sometimes, like, you know, they'll be talking about a topic all night and you'll be like, okay, I got to know what is in people's minds. What is the audience like? What is it? Yeah, because if you go up first, like, the good thing is you can sort of set the tempo for the crowd, and you can be like, okay, this is the level everyone is at. Everyone can aspire to a certain level and be like, okay, this is where it's good.
Yeah. I used to hate that. I go to an urban show, I used to hate it.
Yeah.
But now, I'm confident enough to say, okay, y'all put me up first. Okay.
Because you're like the leader of the pack. You're like, okay, this is...
I got jokes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And what and whatever
it's like when they put you in the outfield if you think you can catch that.
Right. And whatever direction you go, you can put like people in that direction. Like, you know, you can be like, okay, we're gonna be really goofy tonight. Let's do this. We're gonna be really dark tonight. Like, we're gonna get prepared for this type of stuff.
You can see where the crowd moves. Yeah, it's a good indicator. It's a good indicator.
Right.
I try, when I go to mics, I try to stay, I try to watch, you know, I'm not going to sleep, I do my set and just leave, you know, I try to, although, I'm kind of reminded of Gary Owens now, because Gary, if you know Gary Owens, he said, I don't watch other comedians, because what happens is, their jokes seep into your mind.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And you might subconsciously write, not their joke, but a joke similar, and that happens all the time, that's why
right.
It's kind of, It's kind of, but I'm also a fan of comedy. I like laughing too. I'm a great audience member at mics. Like, I don't heckle. I don't like sit there and laugh, you know. But also, don't fear too many comedians, you know, and all that. I don't like watching
a lot of
comedians on
Netflix. Oh, yeah, for sure. His cadence, Cat Williams, is fantastic. And he's another guy that's, like, just silly is so good. Yeah.
To the point where they can say something that, if another person said it, would be funny, but the way they say it, the way they say it, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, so that is a gift. That takes time. That takes chiseling your accent. Perfection, you know what I mean? It's just it's got new voice. Like, it's a voice you can hear, not even seeing him, and no one's catching. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, for sure.
The way he moves on stage, stuff like that. It's a style, like, right? Some comedians just have a great style about them. That it's their style first, and then their jokes.
Right. Oh, yeah.
His jokes are so good, so it's in the jokes first, and then it's him just sitting here telling them.
Right.
You know? But
Richard Pryor, yeah.
Eddie Murphy, their style, you know, the way they talk, their cadence, you know, all that stuff. You know, I don't know if I have a style. I have to look at myself more, because I'm always judging me. Like, oh, why are my hands like that? Oh, man.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Bobbing back and forth like that. Oh, God. I'm always criticized. I'm like my worst critic.
Oh, yeah. I think we all are, you know. You know what's funny? I'll have comedians on that are, like, headliners on this podcast. And the thing that's funny is they have the same insecurity as all of us. They're like – and also a lot of, like, everyone that I've talked to that's sort of a little bit bigger in comedy, they don't view the hierarchy as we do. Like – we'll view someone as super successful and super big, and they'll be like, no, I'm just a comic like you. It's like, you know, everyone understands the grind. It's like we're all at even playing field because everyone knows how fucking hard it is to do comedy. Everyone is like – and, you know, the people that have quote-unquote made it, they've gone through the shit we've gone through 10 times worse because – That's awesome, yeah.
Yeah, it's like,
and he probably gets it. He's like, because they have like that flashback of they understand what it's like when they're starting out to be like, and a lot of people who are like him, they have a more respect for us now because of social media and how hard it is.
Yeah.
And especially like you said, like comedians in the 80s, there was like no comedians back then. Now there's so much to compete with and go up against and, you know, try and stick out from.
And if you think about it, if you meet these comedians, will, like, that's the thing about the art of comedy. Like, Bill Gull, I saw Bill Gull in the picture.
Yeah.
Now, you think a star like that would have, like, you know, like, bodyguard, you know, like, take somebody like that, somebody, you're not just walking up on the hill and take no picture.
Right.
Somebody like a Bill Bellamy and Stress Factory, you gotta walk through the crowd. You gotta be right there. Like,
yeah.
You're right there with people. Like, so personal, man. Even at your biggest point, you're there with the people. I'm with Baby Smooth, and he's signing autographs. JB signs autographs and takes pictures with people pretty much out of every show. Only time I've been with him, when he did do it, was during COVID. But most of his shows, after his show, me and his brother, we're back there selling the t-shirts, and he's signing them, taking pictures with the audience. There'd be a line around the place. There's another hour. Like,
yeah.
Like, that's how it is, man. You still
got
to get love from people
because
that love translates into laughs.
Yeah. It's so awesome to talk to you about comedy. I love that you love it so much. I got to end it right here, but I have people come back on a lot. Yeah. So I'll definitely have you come back on.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for doing this.
I'm a fan of art.
Yeah.
Started with art, started with drawing. I drew on the walls, I drew on everything.
Yeah.
And transitioned into acting in the theater. But I want to thank you for having me. It was a great discussion, conversation.
Yeah, for sure. I'll definitely have to have you on again. Thank you so much for giving me your time. And.
Yeah,
Yeah, just look me up, and if your people want to look me up, I'm JLAT, JLAT, the comedian, mm-hmm. on all social media platforms, even on OnlyFans. Nah, all
right.
Nah, I'll be doing some, I'll maybe do some butt-naked comedy, who knows, but now, JLAT, the comedian, on Instagram, all the social media platforms, you want to look me up. I come to a show. I got a show. Oh, and I got a show coming up on Wednesday. Look me up on Instagram. It's posted on my Instagram. It's in Patterson.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a good show. I can't wait for it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'll promote that. Okay, great. All right. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Have a nice night, man.
Thank you for having me. You too.